Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Hi guys, my name is Emily and I am the host of the Mom Struggling Well podcast. It is a weekly podcast that tries to help moms move from just struggling. It is hard, y'all, to struggling well. And so I just felt God put on my heart that I'm supposed to like also do a little bit of teaching. And so that's what I'm doing. I would just like to say still that I'm still very uncomfortable with it. This is not something that I feel like I am ever quite ready for. And I only say that to encourage you that if you feel like God's telling you to do something, not just if you feel like you want to do something, but if you feel like God is calling you to do something, do it even if you're still super jittery about it. Okay. It's worth it. Yeah. Okay. So, this is our third one that we've done in the book of John, and we're in still chapter one of John. You can find the other ones that are called just M, because I'm not that creative at naming stuff. You can find those at Mom Struggling Well, wherever you get your podcasts, they're entitled just M. So if this is something that you like and are learning from, then you can head right to those. What we're going to do is start reading in John chapter 1, 38 through 51. It's not a big chunk, but that's what we're going to read today. Jesus turned and saw them following. These are John the Baptist's disciples that heard that he was the Messiah, so they left and went to follow him. He saw that they were following him, and he said, "What are you seeking?" And they said to him, "Rabbi," which means teacher, "where are you staying?" And he said to them, "Come and you will see." So they came and they saw where he was staying, and they stayed with him that day. It was about the 10th hour. So I think that was like 4 o'clock or something. So it wasn't really long enough to go back home. So they just stayed. Such an interesting culture, just to be like, oh, okay, well, you know, since we're here, we're just staying all night. It's not something we would do, but I think that's cool. One of the two who heard John speak and followed Jesus was Andrew, Simon Peter's brother. He first found his own brother, Simon, and said to him, "We've found the Messiah," which means Christ. He brought him to Jesus. Jesus looked at him. So Jesus was looking at Peter, and he said, "You're Simon, the son of John, and you shall be called Cephas," which means Peter. So that's interesting. He just renamed him right there. The next day, this is verse 43, Jesus decided to go to Galilee. He found Philip and he said to him, "Follow me." Now Philip was from Bethsaida, the city of Andrew and Peter. Philip found Nathanael and said to him, "We have found him of whom Moses in the law and also the prophets wrote, Jesus of Nazareth, the son of Joseph." So he's telling his friends, "Hey, we found the Messiah." Nathanael said to him, "Can anything good come out of Nazareth?" And Philip said to him, "Come and see." Jesus saw Nathanael coming toward him and said of him, "Behold, an Israelite indeed in whom there is no deceit." Nathanael said to him, "How do you know me? You don't know me." Jesus answered him, Before Philip called you, when you were under a fig tree, I saw you." Nathanael answered him, "Rabbi, you are the Son of God. You're the King of Israel." Jesus answered him, "Because I said to you, I saw you under a fig tree, do you believe? You will see many greater things than these." And he said to him, "Truly, truly, I say to you, you'll see heaven opened and the angels of God ascending and descending on the Son of Man." So that's all we're reading today. This passage really wrecked me in some really great ways, and so I'm excited to share with you what I heard from God, and I'm excited to then have you go hear from him yourself. So, verse 38, Jesus we're going back to the beginning. So Jesus sees the disciples of John the Baptist just kind of following along behind him, maybe really close, maybe not close. I wonder what that was like. Do you like sidle up real like nonchalant, or do you like, how does that go if you're trying to become a disciple of a new person? I'm not sure. But so he noticed them and said, "What do you want?" And I think that that's such a good question for us when we are following Christ. Like, what are we hoping for? What are our motives? What do we think he can do for us? Is that why we're there? Or are we there because of him and who he is? Or do we even really know? Sometimes we want what he can do for us and we don't actually want him. I would encourage you to explore your motives with him. Like, what is it? What do you want? He already knows your motives. I think sometimes we want to pretend our motives are something else. Or maybe sometimes we really don't even know what our motives are. But I would encourage you to kind of unpack those with the Lord. What are your motives for following him? He already knows him anyway, so you might as well just unpack them with him. I think for me, my motives for what did I want with God was sometimes a lot of it appearances. Like, I wanted to be a good girl and following Christ was the thing you did. And so I think that sometimes it's because we feel really guilty and we don't want to feel guilty. So that's a motive for following Christ. I just think that we need to really dig down deep and realize what we need is him, not what he can do for us. Not because we don't want to go to hell, which is valid concern to not want to go to hell, but we should want him. I think also, what do we expect of Christ? So I didn't say this in the beginning, but as I looked through this passage, I saw a lot of expectations and I saw a lot of invitations. He said, what do you want? What do you want from me? What are you expecting from me? And I think that we need to think about what do we expect from Christ? Sometimes our expectations of Christ are far too small. I think that that is the thing that we err on the side of not realizing how huge he is. With that, in the same, like the other side of the coin is our expectations of God are too small, but our expectations of people are too large. Even if we think that we are healthy and we think that we are not expecting unrealistic things of people, it's just so humbling and sobering to realize we've gotten it kind of upside down and we're thinking people can fill things that only the Lord can fill. So I loved this question that he said, what do you want? What are you seeking? And so I think a strategy to struggle well this week would really be to get with God and say, Lord, I've been seeking approval of people and not you. Or I've been seeking people to bring me my deep abiding sense of value and not you. Or I'm expecting way too little for you. I don't believe you actually can do the things that you say in this word that you can do. Just to think about our expectations of the Lord. I think that's good. It was really good for me. Really kind of wrecked me this week. So then in verse 38, so he's basically saying, what do you want? And again, that's just not the Jesus I would think on a flannel graph. I think he would like have open arms and say, welcome, my sons, or something. But to say, what do you want? doesn't feel like a Jesus question, but it's direct and it's what he said. And I love it. So then verse 38, we get the answer. The two guys said, where are you staying? And I think it's a good answer because it shows like they want him. Where are you going to be? Because that's where we want to be. Oh, what a heart that the Lord loves, right? They wanted him. They didn't just want what he could do for them. I think as a mom, sometimes we feel used a lot, like even to the point of like as a human tissue, my son, when he was little, was constantly wiping his nose on my pants, you know? And so I think we feel used in every possible way. It's just so nice when we are not wanted for what we can give and what we can provide. And I think that the Lord wants us to want him, not just what he can do, right? This week, I think that we could apply this by saying, Lord, forgive me. I have wanted what you could give and I just want to be where you are. I think that's a good application that I personally want to apply myself. So then he says, what do you want? And they say, we basically just want to be where you are. And then he invites them. So here's like the first invitation. Verse 39, he says, they said, where are you going to be? And he said, come and see. So there's an invitation. God is always asking us to join him. I think that the really cool thing is that we don't just have to think this is an isolated incident or an incident that happened just in John chapter 1 to these two people. The invitation still stands. He invited all of us. He's inviting you, like even you. Sometimes we think he invites everybody else, but not me. For whatever reason, we make up a bunch of reasons why he couldn't possibly invite us. And honestly, that's absolute hogwash. It's a lie, and it's not a lie that doesn't have severe consequences and ramifications. If we don't feel like God invited us, we're going to act differently. You know, if there's a big party and you got an invitation, but for some reason you're not quite sure if it's the real invitation, like maybe it's a fake one. I don't know why people would send fake invitations. This is where the metaphor is breaking down. But you understand, if you don't think you actually got an invitation, you might just not go. You may just stay home and miss the whole thing. Or maybe you don't believe that the invitation was real. And so instead of going in the front, you kind of sneak in through the kitchen or something. And you're there, but you hope nobody finds out. Like, you really want to go to the party, but you don't feel like you have any business at the party. The invitation, we all have one, and it's the real one. And we do not need to shamefully kind of slink in through the back or just hope that the party thrower doesn't notice that we kind of crashed the party. We're invited. We can come in through the front door boldly. We are supposed to be there. If you feel like you are not totally invited, or you were invited with some hesitancy, those things are lies. So I would just encourage you to cast those things off. Don't live like that, because it's going to make you live differently at the party. You know, if you don't think that you are really supposed to be there, you're gonna behave differently at that party. And the Lord invites us all to the table, and we need to own it, ladies. You know, we need to own it. And I say that for me too. I just, even today, a friend, completely innocent, but I've been feeling just really some rejection and some things like that. That's kind of the pit that I like to crawl into. And so it's kind of been flaring up. And I got a picture of a letter today. And I thought, oh my gosh, that's so cool. Like, that person sending me a letter. And then they said, oh, I don't know how that picture got sent to you. That's not for you. And I thought, oh my gosh, that's so ironic that I am about to talk about when we feel like we're not invited. And I have been in my personal life feeling uninvited. And then I get a letter, and then it's not to me. But I think, you know, it's just, we're invited. You know, and so by all intents and purposes, there's going to be things that show us that we're not, and doggone it, not true. That's a lie. Push it off. Get it aside. We don't need to live under that. It's going to change the way we live. And homegirls, we're at a party. So there's that. Okay, so then verse 41, he's invited them. And Andrew, in verse 41, first thing he did once he was invited was he found his brother, and he brought his brother. And I think that we like to not do that, because we forget that Jesus didn't just come for us. And so I think we should invite people. I've had points in my life, I'm not that great at it now, but it's, you know, you got to discern when do you talk to people and when do you not. But points in my life where family members would say, can you stop talking to me about Jesus? I got it. In some ways, that's like, it's really embarrassing, because you don't want to be annoying. But in other ways, we're inviting, and that's a good thing. So just, we need to keep inviting people. If we have found something that's fantastic, we cannot help but talk about it, right? If we're not talking about Jesus, then is he not that fantastic? That's not true. Or are we not that convinced about it? We probably wouldn't want to admit that. But if we weren't telling people, then I don't know. Our actions speak louder than our words, right? I think also, When Andrew invited Peter, it's not on him whether or not Peter was like, oh yeah, you are the Son of God, or no, he's not. It's just on us to invite, right? I think a lot of times we think, but I can't like make them understand how great Jesus is. I don't know enough. I didn't go to Bible college or whatever. And so we don't invite because we're afraid of their next questions, because we don't think we can answer them. But honestly, that's not our business. Our business is to open our mouth and say, hey, do you know about God? Or do you have a faith? Or can I tell you where I find my hope? And then just whatever God does with that is what God does with it. It's not your business. It's not your problem. But inviting is. And then so the next thing, he invites Simon. And then in verse 42, and I've already talked about this at the end of a recent podcast I did, so I'm not going to go into it too much. But Peter just got his whole identity changed. He saw Jesus, and Jesus said, this is what your name was. This is who your family is. Like, this is your family name. This was your name. And this is who you're going to be now. And so he straight up said, yeah, new identity, man. I'm giving it to you. And what I love about that is that he called out of Peter what Peter wasn't. He called Peter a rock. Peter was not a rock. You do not have to read far in the New Testament to realize Peter was not a rock. But Jesus saw what Peter could be. Jesus saw what Peter was meant to be. And so he calls our identities out in us. And the other thing is we just need to go with it. We don't need to go, oh, well, did he mean that? Or, oh, was, have I messed that up? Like, stop. And I'm talking to myself. I will talk myself out of truth. It takes a lot of effort, but I'm really good at it. I believe it for you, but I don't believe it for me. And I'm sick of it. That's not the way we're supposed to live. So he gave Peter a new identity and he wants to do the same to you. I'm gonna tell you a quick story. I didn't mean to say this, but when I was at the instructor training with Revelation Wellness, they asked us a lot about our name, like, who does God say you are? Things like that. And my name means, Emily means striving. And honestly, when they kept bringing that up and asking us to pray about it, I felt very uncomfortable because that has been my life, has been striving. A lot of work and a lot of unrest. And it's not a good feeling. And so the idea of what is your name? And I know my name. I've lived that. And it's painful and it's exhausting and it's not a life of peace and joy like I'm called to, right? And so the ladies in my cabin 8, I love them. They said, well, what's your middle name mean? And my middle name's Anna. And I'm like, I don't know. I don't even care. Whatever. My name means striving and I'm a striver. Like it's my lot, you know? And so they said, oh, it means grace. And one of the girls said, okay, so like striving and grace. And I'm like, well, I mean, I guess. And then one of the other girls said, doesn't that sound like struggling well? And I was like, oh my gosh. So all of a sudden it kind of redeemed this feeling of I have been over here and now I have a new name or at least a new perspective on the pits that I typically fall into. So anyway, ask God about your name. And that's especially exciting if you don't like your name. So I challenge you to ask God who you are or ask God who he says you are or could be, because he knows who we are and he loves us and he thinks we're pretty great. And so when we start believing that something else is going on, then it's a lie. Next, Philip invited his friend Nathaniel. That's what he did. And I think that just like we need to invite our family, we need to invite our friends. We need to invite our friends, even if we think our friends are going to think we're weird. It really doesn't matter. I think I talked about this last week. Jesus didn't ask you to only talk about him if it doesn't feel awkward. I had a friend who was an atheist. She's still my friend. And she's like, I need you to know that I don't know if I believe in God. I didn't want you to think I was a Christian and I'm really not. And I was like, I knew you weren't a Christian and it's totally fine. And so she goes, well, you know, she explained how she used to believe, but then she doesn't believe anymore. And she, you know, whatever, we walked through that. And I said, listen, I'm going to challenge you to ask God if he's real. Just, I invite you to ask him. And that's a weird thing to say, to be honest, but I don't care. He is real. And I knew that she at one point believed and now she doesn't. So anyway, he did a lot. He did like 6 things that week that made her just like knocked her socks off. So invite your friends, even the ones who don't believe, and let God do the rest. Let him be crazy good to them like he wants to be. Verse 46, Nathaniel was invited by Philip, and Nathaniel, I appreciate his honesty. He said, can anything good come out of Nazareth? Like for reals, you think the Son of God came out of Nazareth? My first question to myself was, is he being a cynic or is he being a realist? And I tend towards very practical, very reality. Like, what can I see? I can tell the problems. I can see if you show me a room, I can see everything that's out of place. And I don't love that about myself. It's good because, you know, you need to be able to see like pitfalls in the future. But if all you can see is pitfalls, first of all, that's easier than seeing God at work. And I'm married at the most positive person I've ever met in my life. And so I've learned a lot and God has really used him in my life. But I think that being a cynic is easy. It's the easy way out. I think being negative and calling it being real is a cop out. And I'm talking to myself because I really tend towards that. The spiritual is more real than what we can see. And so if I'm going to call myself a realist, I need to be focusing on what God's doing and where he's moving, because that's what's real. And honestly, very honestly, if we're cynical, that comes from a place of hurt, I think. At least it has in my own life. You build up walls to keep yourself safe. You've seen a lot of people not come through for you. And you've seen a lot of things blow up in your face. And you don't want that. And so you're gonna keep people at a distance. And so I would encourage you to be a realist. And by realist, I mean, focus on what's more real than what we can see and see where God is moving. And that's what I'm headed towards. That's what I want to do. I think, though, that in the name of being practical and being a realist, like I said previously about expectations, our expectations about the Lord are entirely too low in the name of realism. Let's not do that. Let's believe that he can do what he says he's going to do. I think that'll change a lot of stuff for us. And then so in verse 47, Jesus's reply to Nathanael's statement of how can anything good come out of that was, "Behold, an Israelite indeed in whom there is no deceit." I just love how Jesus meets us where we are. He's like, wow, it's so great that you speak whatever's on your mind. And I think there's a value to that. There's certainly a value to that. But if what we're speaking is not right, our words have more power than we realize. They have a lot of power. When I was little, for whatever reason, I did not feel at liberty to speak freely. I did not feel at liberty to be honest about where I was at. And so as I grew older and moved out and became a grown-up, I felt I felt the need to speak truth. And again, that's a good thing. But when what I'm calling truth is just feelings, and again, coming from a cynical place of hurt, that's not good. And it's not truth, and it's not helpful, and our words have power. And so I think I love that Jesus met him where he was and said, wow, you sure say whatever you think. It's so great. There's something even greater. And it's speaking what's actually true in a situation. So again, I told you this dug up a lot of stuff for me, this couple of verses. So I think to the cynics, it's a great place to start speaking what we feel like is true. But let's ask God to help us see what's actually true. Let's challenge ourselves to grow, to see with our spiritual eyes what's actually true and not what we're perceiving as true because of places of hurt in our past. Yeah. And then verse 48, Jesus's reply was, "I saw you under that tree, that fig tree, before Philip called you. I saw you under a tree." And I loved that his immediate response was, "You're the Son of God." That's all it took was, "I saw you under a tree." And all of a sudden you went from nothing good can come out of Nazareth to "You're God's son." What? For reals? It didn't take much. In verse 51, Jesus said the same thing. He's like, "That's all it took, for reals, that I saw you under a tree. You're going to see way more awesome things happen than that, Nathanael." It says you're going to see angels ascending and descending on the Son of Man when the heavens open up. That's way better than seeing somebody under a tree, seeing heaven open up. What we can get out of this last verse 51 is that Jesus, he's the way, man. He is what gets people to heaven. And it would be so neat if there was more ways. I would love it if there was lots of ways. It would mean that my heart wouldn't have to break for my friends and family who don't know the Lord. I would much prefer that there was lots of ways, but there aren't. And so the other good news, though, because that feels like bad news in my heart, it feels like bad news when I know of all the people who don't know him. But the good news is you're invited. Like, you really have an actual invitation, like Willy Wonka golden ticket. You got it, and I got it, and it's a real one. And so there is only one way, but we're invited to that party. So it's awesome. I'm going to go ahead and pray for us. God, thank you that you've invited us. Thank you that you genuinely love us and want us there. We aren't just like the second string or the ones that were invited because everybody else couldn't come. And I mean, really, none of that would matter. The fact is we're invited, but you love us and you want us there. So thank you for that. God, would we live like that? Would that become something that we let sink down and into the fibers of our identity? Additionally, thank you that we can expect great things of you. We can expect way more than we can see with our physical eyes. And so God, I pray that you'd help us to expect you to be how great you actually are, and that we wouldn't expect you to act the way that we've been treated by people in the past. God, would you help the pain and the hurt and the walls fall down, that we would not be operating out of a place of hurt that has no place with us in our new identity with you, God. In Jesus' name, amen.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.